Good morning, honorable members. Good morning to the officials of our department and our guests who are here. Morning to you. We are all welcome to the meeting of Home Affairs. Today we will be dealing with the other three provinces, which is the Western Cape, Northern Cape, and Eastern Cape. We will follow the usual routine that we do of introducing ourselves to our officials because we don't interact with them every time. I'm sure we do that once or twice a year. We will introduce ourselves as members, and they will also in turn introduce themselves. And I'm not sure whether Mr. Yusuf will be doing the introduction or you know how to handle it. Without any waste of time, my name is Maggie Maunye. I'm a member of the Portfolio Committee on Home Affairs. And on my left, it's Mr. Matonzi, who's our committee secretary. On the right is Mr. Adam Salmon, who's our researcher. Honorable Peterson Madonna.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Pearl Peterson Majuna, a member of this committee from Gauteng Province. Thank you.
Morning. I'm Paul Hasubon, a member of this portfolio committee from the Northern Cape. Thank you.
Good morning. I am Masizole Mungasela, a member of this portfolio committee. Thank you.
Good morning, my name is Manny Freitas, I'm a member of the Portfolio Committee.
Yeah, some of our members are not here due to other parliamentary work. They are on oversight basis to provinces. And we do have apologies to that. Oh, over to you, Dr. Yunus.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, Honourable Chairperson. Good morning, Honourable Members. May you allow me, Chairperson, just to say and thank you for the opportunity for the provinces to come to the Portfolio Committee to show you all the work we do, and there's lots we do in a province, but also to show you the loyalty and commitment and hard work we put in provinces. So thank you for that opportunity. My name is Yusuf Simons. I'm the Provincial Manager for Western Cape. Chairperson, we've agreed with the other provincial managers of Eastern Cape and Northern Cape that we'll all introduce our delegation from our respective provinces. So with me here is our Director of Finance on my left, Ms. Ayanda Mafuleka. Next to her is Ms. Almin van der Berg, who is our Provincial Coordinator for Service Delivery and Outreach Programs in the Western Cape. And then a very familiar face, Ms. Martha Mgashi, who's come to the Portfolio Committee many times. She's the District Manager of Operations for the Cape Metro, as well as the West Coast Municipalities. Can I now hand over to Mr. Mabulu from the Eastern Cape, Chairperson?
Thank you very much, Chairperson, members. I think I should take the opportunity as well to highlight the fact that it's my second month in the province, and I've been welcomed into so much great work that has been done by my colleagues, except that we need to improve there and there. On my left, I have my predecessor, the former acting provincial manager, Ms. Sondo Lusu, on my left, and on my right, I have my finance director, Dr. Johannes Felodin Johannes. Thank you very much, sir.
Good morning, honorable members. I'm Abednego Mvula, the provincial manager from Northern Cape. I'm not alone. I'm with my director of finance, admin and support, Ms. Faith Betawan Nokosa. She's sitting at the back. I wish you were sitting here, but she chose to sit at the back. We are a very small province in terms of population, but the biggest province in terms of the geographic size. Thank you very much, honorable members.
Thank you, our officials. But maybe to congratulate and welcome Mr. Mabulu. We all know him as a liaison officer who was here linking up to the office of the minister. Today, he is now the provincial manager for Eastern Cape. You are welcome, Dr. Gunil, and we hope that you will do the work as you used to do your work here in Parliament, continue doing the good work in Eastern Cape. We want to hand over to Mr. Simons to make your presentation. But before you do that, we also have one of our members, Honorable Graham McIntosh, who has just joined us. Over to you, Mr. Simons.
Thank you, Chairperson. Firstly, if the Chairperson and the members can see, we've got many slides, it's 80 slides, but many of the slides we put in for information purposes as well, so that the Chairperson and the members can get a holistic view. So some of the slides I'm going to go through very quickly because it's information purposes, and other slides I will spend a bit more time on. I understand we have 30 minutes, Chairperson. Yes, for presentation. Thank you. Let me then start. This is the outline table of contents in the document which we will go through. It's a page of content. We will focus on all these areas outlined there. The next slide is on the vision and mission, Chairperson. If you allow, I'm sure the other provinces presented, so if I can go, don't need to present that, as well as the strategic outcomes and how the provinces are also aligned to the strategic outcomes. Is that fine? Thank you. Now, Chairperson, members, you would all be familiar with this map. It's a map of the Western Cape, but what we want to show there is just the different five district municipalities and the metro we have. We have the district municipality of West Coast, Cape Winelands, Central Karoo, Eden, Overberg, and then the city of Cape Town. This I'll unpack a bit more in the next slide. This slide actually says a lot, Chairperson, about the Western Cape. That red is there. What it says is that our metro dwellers, we've got 3.4 million out of the 5.2 million of the population in the Western Cape. 3.4 million of those, more than 60%, are situated right here in the metro. So all our statistics, most of our 70% of our statistics, our clients are based in the metro. Most of our staff are based here and most of our offices as well. So there's a huge concentration in the metro area. That's the language spoken here. The smallest district municipality is Central Karoo. We used to have one office only in the whole of the Central Karoo, but I'm delighted to say that in June we've opened the office in Lanesburg. I used to drive past Lanesburg and wonder why we never had an office there, because those people had to go to Beaufort West. But now, Chairperson, we opened the office with fully staffed, with permanent staff members as well. So this is the background to what I'm presenting. Just some more stats on Western Cape. The area, it's 10% of the land surface in South Africa is in the Western Cape. Our population is 5.2 million in terms of the 2011 census, which is 11% of the population is Western Cape. And the unemployment rate, what we got from Stats SA, is 19.7%, which is below the national unemployment rate of 23.2%. The major industries here are tourism, farming, and fishing. These are just a strategic and socioeconomic overview of the Western Cape, Chairperson. I'm going to go briefly through it for information of the members. So for us, the economic hub of the Western Cape is the metro. The population density is about 1.4 1,000 persons per square kilometer. When I used to work in the Northern Cape a few years ago, many years ago, our square kilometers that size that time was 2 persons per square kilometer. So now we have 1,400 Jefferson. Then further on, the Western Cape Provincial Spatial Development Framework has identified the Mossel Bay George Neisner area, the Eden District Municipality, as an emerging secondary metropolitan area, which is a vastly developing area, fast developing area, and that Saldanha Bay, the West Coast area, is also becoming an emerging as economic development area. So what that tells us is that when we do our planning for new offices, we need to look at these areas to also expand our footprint there. Literacy rates, the adult literacy rate is 94.6%. Matriculation, last year we achieved the highest matriculation rate. This just tells us about the education levels in Western Cape. So when we do recruitment, this is what we bear in mind. We've got 3 universities. Then in terms of unemployment, I spoke about that, but the unemployment rate is mostly amongst the African blacks, which is 53%, and the colored, which is, that should be 32%. The life expectancy in the Western Cape is 67 years in comparison with 62.8 years, which means we, in Western Cape, we live a bit longer than other areas in South Africa. So that also tells us about the services we produce, especially when it comes to the social aspects there as well. Then poverty levels, we have high poverty informal settlements, especially areas we need to focus on with our service delivery in the Khayelitsha, which is a presidential node, the Neisner and Central Karoo area, which is also vastly rural. This stats come from Stats SA in 2009. So strategic overview, I think I spoke a bit about it. As we've got a youthful nature of the working population in the Western Cape. So for us, we're becoming increasingly younger as a province, so we need to create employment opportunities, career advancement opportunities, mentoring opportunities as more young people enter the employment here in the Western Cape, especially I'm talking about Home Affairs now. So we need to look at how we promote and maintain those youthful members that we have. Also, the issue then is what it creates is institutional memory that we need to retain, because as people retire, Jefferson, and more young people join our department, we need to make sure that we retain that institutional memory. This is just, and then I think one of the challenges for us is the high prevalence of drug and alcohol addiction in the Western Cape, especially amongst the youth, again, implying that most of our officials are young, so they fall prey to this addiction, and that also affects our officers become more vulnerable to theft, break-ins, etc. So that's what we need to bear in mind as well when you plan in terms of security. That was the strategic overview that I wanted to start with, Jefferson. Now, if you go back to the Western Cape, the structure, this is our structures, myself there, and with Ayanda as the Director of Finance and Support. We then have 2 appointed DMOs in the form of Mrs. Ngashi and Elaine Goy for Witzenberg and Overberg. Witzenberg is the Cape Winelands area. And then Almin van der Berg is acting as the Central Karoo and Eden District Manager of Operations. And then we have the Refugee Center, which we no longer have. We have, as you know, Jefferson, we closed the refugee center in Maitland. Western Cape do not have a refugee center. We have a temporary facility now at Customs House to finalize all the applications of those asylum seekers who applied at the Maitland center. But I'll come to that later in the presentation. This is just the footprint. So in total, we've got 26 offices, 6 large ones, and local medium offices and small offices, and that's the breakdown. We have the seaport here, Jefferson, but as you know, the airport now reports directly to Pretoria. So the airport statistics is not included in this presentation. It's included in the presentation by head office, by the chief director, ports of entry. This is again our footprint. This just slide just indicates in the metro the different offices we have. As you can see, there are many offices in the metro area. But as I was saying the other day that in Cape Town we still only have one office in the CBD. If you look at any private institution, I don't know how many Absa banks you have in the CBD, but certainly we need to look at the Western Cape because there's a lot of traffic in and out of the office here in Barrack Street, Jefferson. Then the West Coast, what the slide indicates is the offices we have, and if we do not have an office in a local or this local municipality, it's how it's serviced by a mobile unit, Jefferson. This is the next slide is about the other district municipalities, Eden and Overberg municipalities. Again, the offices we have in the Eden area as well as in Eden, for example, we have an office in George, in Oudtshoorn, in Plettenberg Bay, in Mossel Bay. We are at the Mossel Bay Harbour, but we've also got an online hospital in Nisner area. This is the mobile offices we have at the moment. We have 11 mobile units. Six of them are functional. We've got 11 drivers, and we've got staff also appointed, but only two FOCs. The other staff are sourced from the office itself. So the challenge we have is again, functionality of these mobile units, but I'm sure you've heard that before in every year as well. The provincial fleet. Chairperson, members, we've got 90 vehicles in the Western Cape. That's the breakdown per month that we have for the first quarter, and we received one additional new vehicle in May. All of them are functional at the moment. These are the hospitals. The hospitals where we've got two slides on hospitals. These are the hospitals where we have a full-time presence, Chairperson. A full-time presence in where we have appointed a staff member who works from the morning till 4 o'clock at these hospitals every day, and they register first. What the slide indicates is whether it's connected, and sometimes we have connection problems, especially in Phuket Bay, for example, whether it's a public facility or a private hospital. At the moment, they are public hospitals. There is a Mediclinic in Mitchell's Plain that's also connected. And then the live births, which is interesting about this slide, it shows the live births and the actual births we register at that hospital. And the percentage is how successful are we in registering the babies born in that hospital. Now, in some areas we excel, and some areas we're not excelling, and some areas we're struggling to get the stats from the Department of Health. But that is where we are negotiating with the hospitals and meeting with the head of the hospital. For example, Site B Clinic is in Khayelitsha. And if it's more than 100% Chairperson, what it means is that babies not born in that hospital or clinic come and register also at that hospital. So it's not only born at that hospital, which is actually good what we want, because the hospital is not there only to service those born in the hospital, but just whoever can come and register at that hospital. These are the listed hospitals then connected health facilities in the Western Cape. Here's the indication also of public and private hospitals. We do focus on public hospitals, Jefferson, and members. We also, what we do with private hospitals, we go there and visit them on agreement. Because in a private hospital, the mothers stay about 3 nights, so we go either on a Monday or the Tuesday and we still find them. Or the Thursday, we still find the mothers at the hospital. But we're not there full time. These are just, I think I spoke about this slide already. This is just to bring to the members' attention the refurbished offices. We've got 13 out of our offices. 52% of our offices have been refurbished in the new look and feel of the department, colors of the department. This is the office in Barrack Street, which you all know it was opened last year, but it shows you what it looked like and what's looking like now. It's a vast improvement. This is the office in Wynberg, which was late last year we opened. Wynberg was also one of the offices where we had many challenges with infrastructure because what we see here, the air conditions never worked, there were holes in the floor, etc. So now we are in the mall in Wynberg. It's a very good office. It was opened by the Deputy Minister last year, and we received a lot of comments, positive comments, about the infrastructure and the operations in the office. Why we focus, Jefferson, on Cape Town and Wynberg, I think I said it last year as well, is because most of our statistics, most of our clients, as well as the queries or complaints, come from these offices. So it's important that you then turn around these offices so that you make a bigger impact in the Western Cape. In terms of leases, these are just some of the signed leases we have recently. What we want to bring to the portfolio committee's attention is the outstanding leases, Jefferson, that we have a struggle with the Department of Public Works. We have submitted our documents, so it's on month-to-month rentals. I know in Mitchell's Plain, for example, the landlord 2 months ago closed us down. We got there the morning and the office was locked because of not rentals being paid. But we then, DG then stepped in and resolved the problem. It's all open now at the moment, but we have the risk of a month-to-month rental, and we are dependent on Department of Public Works to conclude these leases for us. Then the closure of the relocation of the refugee center in Cape Town. Jefferson, on the 30th of April, we received a notice from the landlord to say that our lease with him is being terminated. He's terminating our lease. We are on a month-to-month lease basis with him, and he's only able or willing to grant us the extension until the 30th of June. We negotiated with him, but he said he's not willing to extend the lease. He's already got a long-term tenant coming in. So we had no choice, Jefferson. We didn't close. I want to state that the Department of Home Affairs did not close the refugee center in Maitland. We were closed by a landlord who terminated our lease agreement. And as you know, Jefferson, you can't find a building overnight in that particular area. So the DG then consulted with SCRA, the Standing Committee on Refugee Affairs, on the closure of the center, as well as had two sessions where the DG himself came to consult with stakeholders and NGOs in the refugee environment. We then moved to the center was then closed on the 2nd of July, and from henceforth, the refugee IDs are now issued and passports are issued in Barrack Street. Those are recognized refugees. Section 22 extensions and adjudications are done in the temporary facility at Customs House so that we can finalize, if you're applying in Cape Town, we're not telling you to go away and finalize your case somewhere else or send the file somewhere else, Jefferson. The department has decided that we'll finalize the cases here in Cape Town. So the temporary facility will remain open until those cases have been finalized. And then our SCRA and Refugee Appeal Board is also on the fifth floor in Customs House. From the 2nd of July, newcomers have been informed that they need to apply at other refugee centers at Musina, Marabastad and Durban, and there was a media campaign in terms of that, checks. Now we're going to go to the capacity information. This slide just shows the reporting structure, which I'm not going to speak a lot about. It just shows that every Monday we have an EXCO meeting, we have provincial decision registers, we have monthly meetings with the reports from the DMOs as well as Director of Finance. We have office inspection toolkits, which all the provinces now conduct, Jefferson. So every month we visit all the offices and using an inspection toolkit, and we have reports submitted. And we've also created the M&E unit, monitoring and evaluation, so that we monitor the implementation of instructions, circulars, and compliance. This is our capacity levels, Jefferson, that indicated here. It indicates, for example, the provincial manager's office, the number of posts, the refugee center, the level of capacity, as well as the metro offices, as well as the other districts, Jefferson. What it shows there, I'm just going to write to the end, is that we have 549 staff. We'll be appointing 129 in this year still. So that is the number of posts we have. 500 plus, I think that's 678. 678 posts we'll have. The home bodies will have in Home Affairs, Western Cape by the end of the financial year. Jefferson, we included this slide just to show you the staff, the committee, the staff turnover rate. The next slide on capacity information. It indicates the turnover of staff either through dismissal or resignation or transfers or promotions to other areas. So we are now at 3.4%, that's the staff turnover, 3.4% of our staff leave us annually. In terms of our equity, members and Jefferson, this is our equity. It represents that we are 29% are colored, 59% are African, white are 12%, and 0.01% are Indian. In terms of gender, 64% of the staff in the Western Cape are female, and 36% of staff at SMS level, direct and upwards, which includes this team here. That's the ratio at SMS level. In terms of the other levels, it's the same ratio, 64% makeup of female versus 36% of male. Lastly, we presented to the portfolio committee that we had six disabled persons. We have appointed two additional chairperson. We now have 8 persons, so we had 1.4% disability. In terms of people management, these are the performance assessments. All our performance assessments have been done. Last year, 12% of our staff were recommended for performance bonuses. This year, 7% of our staff have been recommended for performance bonuses. As you can see, Chairperson, I'm not reading all the slides. I'm just highlighting key issues that I think is important for the committee. Then, committee on the sick leave. This is also comes from our HR plan. It indicates the level of sick leave taken by our staff and the percentage. As you can see, Chairperson, that the majority of sick leave taken is from level 6 and 8. That's the area that our front office clerks, that's our production unit. So that's for us that we need to focus on. So at least we understand that our production staff, who we need most, are taking most sick leave. The next slide, in terms of pillar. Pillar cases are where somebody has exhausted their sick leave and are still sick. They then go on to an incapacity leave program. Again, the level 6 of production units are the ones mostly using the pillar leave, incapacity leave. And what then happens is if your pillar case or incapacity leave is not approved, it's then leave without pay. This is our qualifications that I thought was interesting for us, Chairperson, is that 63% of our staff in the Western Cape have only got matric level 12 upwards. And those are the other qualifications we have. We have one person with a master's degree, and he was actually an immigration officer arresting people with a master's degree in public administration. So fortunately, I can't say now because the outcome is not clear, but we are looking at this case closely. He's gone through a series of interviews, and so we need to use our director of finance also identified somebody with a BCom degree doing fingerprints. So she's also, so it gives you an idea that once you understand the type of degrees and then see whether they're in the right place so that you put them in an area where the upward mobility can really take place. So 11% of our staff is in human and social studies qualifications, and 5% is in business and commerce. This is training and capacity, just a different training conducted over the quarter. And for us, the highlight is that 94 of our employees have enrolled for bursaries this year. So they want to develop themselves, which is good for us as we want to grow the organization. Induction is taking place, and also we have 3 managers now attending the new management development program at WITS. Those are our future leaders, and one SMS member, Mrs. Ngashi, is also attending a program at WITS. This comes from our Learning Academy. And also the last bullet point, Chairperson, is coaching. We've appointed a coach for each of the SMS members. I have a coach as well, and we meet monthly, so they guide us also on leadership and management, and we do team coaching as well. We started about 2 months ago with that, which has really given us the time to reflect and have a voice that somebody you can talk to. I think I spoke about that corruption, eradicating corruption. We have two deputy directors and one assistant director in that area. Those are the cases that have been reported. Chairperson, we have under investigation, we've got 9 cases. That's also the nature of the cases. It's fraud, corruption, financial misconduct, and contravention of the Immigration Act. What you can see there as well, Chairperson, is one person has been arrested in a Wynberg office for not banking money and pocketing money. She's been dismissed already, criminally charged. She's appeared in court a few times. So we send a message out with that particular case. This is in terms of our vetting. We still are behind where we should be with vetting, Chairperson. I think what it shows is that 171 of our staff have been vetted so far. It's in the process. 182 are in possession of clearance certificates. But our current priority is a focus on the Cape Town International Airport, where our vetting officer, we have a full-time vetting officer, is focusing on vetting the airport staff at the moment. In terms of resources and budget, the Director of Finance is here, so she'll take all the questions, Chairperson, but we're in line with our budget expenditure. What it shows here is that we are 19.5% spent. Ayanda can speak more about it, but our goods and services is at 10% spent. But in terms of our commitment register, we are closer to 30%. So we're well on track in spending our budget this financial year. This is our asset management. As you know, we are very focused on our asset registers. So this is the number of assets we have, 17,000. We have 722 lease assets. And all the assets have been verified, and we are actually doing a re-verification of the assets now as well. I can also say that the Auditor General came and audited Cape Town Airport as well as our Stellenbosch office, and no significant findings were found in both of them. It was actually good findings for us. In terms of achievements for supply chain management, we have successfully rolled out our decentralized functions in terms of supply chain management, in terms of procurement, petty cash travel, and fleet management. So if I need to travel now, Chairperson, I don't need to go to head office to get an order number to travel. The Director of Finance can do it locally here. We don't need to go to head office to get a BI-499 approved. We do it locally, so you can get it either the same day or the next day. So that has really been resolved, and that's a big achievement for us. But there's continuous improvements we need to make in the funding of specialized finance posts in the state accountant and the assistant director, as well as continuous workshopping on compliance to BI-488, because there's a risk with decentralization as well, Chief, because you need to do it correctly and ensure that you comply with all the regulations and that's in place. IGR and stakeholders. This is just a list of all the stakeholders we have. I'm not really going to spend time on them, Chairperson. We have interactions with social cluster, the steering committee from the Premier, where we do outreach programs, with local government on outreach programs, with education department for getting to the schools and making sure all the scholars and matriculants get their IDs. And then also with your stakeholders, local municipalities, in terms of disaster management. As you know, Chairperson, we have regular disasters in the Western Cape, so we need to be alert that if there's a fire, we need to go in very quickly so that they can get their benefits from SASSA. On the joints, we cooperate on GCIS, Department of Health, as well as cooperation with the IEC. In terms of outreach programs, there's different Tucson programs we have, mobile unit programs, as well as Tucson Extension, is where we try and participate in the Tucson centers that's already existing, Chairperson. But sometimes you do not have the staff to put full-time staff there, but you do go and visit those Tucson centers. This is the outreach programs that we've conducted in the first quarter from April to June. What it gives the committee is the idea of the districts, the nature of the program. You can see on Freedom Day, we also in Oudtshoorn had a program. The office that ran it, the particular area, as well as the statistics for those outreach programs. In terms of project, Chairperson, our biggest project for us is the filling of our 121 posts. So So in terms of that, we 48 posts have already been advertised, and we're busy with the recruitment, and we're also busy with the advertising of the other posts. Then this is just for the committee also an indication of when the post was advertised, the post and the name of the post and which office they are. In terms of service delivery improvement, we've identified Bellville, Cape Town, and Wynberg. Those are our three, I always emphasize that those are our three main offices in the metro. The most staff, the most public go there, the highest numbers we have. So we have started with a project to really focus on improving that there, Shepherdson. And what I have here is the objectives of the project, which I'm not going to go through. The main aim is that that we're trying to work with the staff to improve the performance of the office. We've improved the infrastructure. We've improved the queue management systems. We put at all these offices. What now remains is the service delivery aspect and the attitude of the staff. So this is what this project is trying to achieve. So this is just the methodology, the approach we're following with that, and these are the areas we're going to focus on to improve that office. It's about roles and responsibilities, channels of communication, service delivery, training. The discipline in the office is always the issue. Business processes, team building, and then office protocol is just how we talk to one another before we even look at how we talk to the public. Document management, performance management, and employer wellness, Shepherdson. Just that Mr. Mkhize started the DDG Civic Services. The department have an arrangement with Old Mutual Collaborative Initiative to improve service delivery with the private sector. So Cape Town office have been identified as a pilot project together with office in Johannesburg, Harrison Street, that Old Mutual will help us to improve customer care in those offices at no cost to the department, Shepherdson. But I'm sure Mr. Mkhize can talk much about it because it's his project. These are duplicate IDs. You know, Shepherdson, have embarked on a duplicate ID project. These are our statistics per office of the total applications submitted and the queries we received. And the types of duplicates, multiple, where one person has four ID numbers, for example, or sharing, where one ID number is shared by four people. The next slide, Shepherdson, is in terms of our birth registration. Our target was to increase our birth registration by 6%. We have achieved that target. This is in the first quarter, we registered 19,000 births in the Western Cape, and that is because of a result of our dedicated presence at hospitals now. The schools project, these are the number of schools we targeted for April, May, and June. But what we, our target for the school, Shepherdson, with the education department, is that we service the schools from March and April. Those are the best times to go to schools. We were informed by education department. So a lot of schools we serviced in March already, which is not part of the first quarter. So in April, May, and June, those are we serviced the 176 schools we went to, and that's the stats. That we visited the 180 school, and that's the statistics. Statistics is broken down into grade 12, the matriculants, because we keep them separately from the other applications, Shepherdson and members. This is the stakeholder forums. What this slide is, I know it's a very busy slide, but again, we wanted to put the information on the slide. It indicates in green those stakeholder forums that we've already launched. We have not launched the city, the metro. The DG came down, we met with the mayor. Last year, we have then, myself, have met with the officials here. We've come to some sort of agreement on the constitution and the terms of reference for the stakeholder forum, but now we've been told 3 weeks ago that the legal department of the mayor's office have now come in and want to change the document again. So we are again not moving on establishing the metro stakeholder forum. But those are the forums we've established. What it also indicates is the current status with these forums and the meetings that we are planning, Shepherdson. So this is the Cape Winelands. We've launched three of the local municipalities. We will be launching, if I go to the previous slide, we'll be launching in this quarter the Overberg District Municipality as well as the Cape Winelands. I have personally met with the district mayors of all the district municipalities, and the buy-in commitment is there as just to get that date, Chairperson, to say, let's do it on this particular date. It's sometimes it's moved. And this is the Eden. The Eden has been launched in 2010, so that's operating, Chairperson. In terms of LRB cases, late registration of birth, these are the stats for April, May, and June again. It indicates the opening balances, what we finalized, and then the total on hand as we are standing now. The Youth Forum, this is a project or not a project. One of our achievements, we launched a Youth Forum in the Western Cape, and that was launched in March this year. So they have participated in Youth Day. What they do is they organize outreach program for the youth. They're very active in the Western Cape. On the 16th of June, also they had an outreach program. They participated in the Department of Public Enterprise Youth Expo on careers in Falsbe and Khayelitsha, and we estimated 1,700 high school learners participated. So we had our youth forum members were running their own mobile outreach program on that particular day. So there is progressive meetings and happenings. They're also part of our EXCO meetings. So every Monday they come in and they participate in my meetings so that we make sure that we align ourselves with and incorporate the youth because we are so youthful nature in the Western Cape of our staff. This is just some of the photos they sent us that they said we should bring to the portfolio committee on the Youth Day Outreach Program. This is them in their T-shirts and the Career Expo where they participated. On Mandela Day, Jefferson, we also in the province embarked on different projects for Mandela Day. We visited 8 schools. In Worcester, we handed out food and clothes, which the staff actually contributed. We didn't get sponsors for this at the Sarah Bartman Center for Abused Women and Children. We had out ID programs distribution in Oudtshoorn, George, Mossel Bay. And the staff of George office also donated food parcels and cleaning material to a pre-primary school in Mossel Bay. Caledon also donated toys to the creche in Caledon area. And Western Cape management and team, we cleaned our office in Stellenbosch. We took some mops and just to tidy up the office, Chairperson. And this is some of the photos of the, you'll see the Western Cape on the one with the mops and brooms, etc., just to show. This is the performance evidence the auditor normally talks about. And in statistical information, this is now in terms of the immigration part. These are asylum seekers, permit extended as 42,000 over the first quarter, and the status determinations conducted over the first quarter. The new arrivals, the interviews conducted was 1,000. Adjudicated, the granted, and the rejected as unfounded or manifestly unfounded. So the approval rate was 19%, 34% was found unfounded cases, rejected, and the 44% as manifestly unfounded rejected cases. This is the port of entry, this is the harbor. So this is the number of foreigners arriving was 1,000. The number of vessels in and out was 356 vessels in the first quarter ending June, Jefferson. We only had one stowaway and 7 penalties issued. We also had, I must say that we had 68 of the previous OR Tambo staff that were trained at the harbor. So they worked at the harbor for since April. They are still there, Jefferson. This is the inspectorate stats on the number of fraudulent births investigated, employers prosecuted, illegal foreigners detected, and illegal foreigners deported as well. So we've achieved the targets we've set ourselves, even though we know there's a lot of work in this regard, a lot of work, Chairperson. The permitting stats, this is the permitting stats, this is permanent residence. We've received 668 applications, 56 approvals was received from head office, and 8 rejections. This is the temporary residence applications. We received 5,542 applications, but received 10,000 approvals from head office. So head office has really performed excellently in terms of finalizing the backlogs with temporary residence permits. We received a lot of permits back now in the office. So far that we're sitting with our own backlogs and bringing more staff to make sure that we can issue these permits because it's coming back very fast from the hub now, Chairperson. This is just an overview of achievements. I'm almost done, Chairperson. Some of these achievements I've spoken about. We're piloting a new shift proposal just to make sure that we we want to eliminate day off, because if it's a day off for a staff, that means we are understaffed on that particular day. So we're creating incentives and changing the shifts so that we don't have days off during the month. And we piloted in Bellville, Cape Town, and Wynberg. It's working well so far, so it will be taken to EXCO that the EXCO DG level can decide whether we should maybe spearhead this as well. I spoke about Old Mutual. I spoke about the coaching sessions we had. I've spoken about the youth forum that we launched. The M&E unit was an important unit, which is headed by Almin van der Berg, because one of the things that we are not good at, Chairperson, you would know, is developing documents, but then the implementation doesn't happen. And it's because we don't have strong monitoring and evaluation. So this is something we focused on. Supply chain management I spoke about. Electronic queue management system I've spoken about. Weinberg's queue management system was installed in the first quarter and is operating now. And on that note, thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Mr. Seymour. Thanks for your elaborate input. Honorable members, it's time for questions and comments. I must say I remember when you were still at Northern Cape. This was the only office that had heaters where he was working in Northern Cape. And you're still continuing with doing the good work. Please continue with your good work, and maybe other provinces will copy from you. Honourable members, question time and comments. Honourable Peterson Maduna, Honourable McIntosh, Honourable De Freitas, Honourable Marcella, in that order. Honourable Hasboni will be the last.
Thank you, Chairperson. I want to thank Western Cape for the good presentation and the good work they are doing. Actually, what has made me very happy is the employment of people with disabilities. I'm very happy about that. But then my question is, how did you do it so that at least other provinces can do the same too? Because we haven't heard anything from the other provinces. It was really a disaster. My second question, why are there three out of the four managers directors in the province employed in acting positions? Then the third one, what has led to the long delays for the repair and maintenance of the mobile units? Has a service provider been sought, and what involvement do the original manufacturers of the vehicles play? I think I'll stop there, Chairperson. Thank you.
Honourable McIntosh.
Madam Chair, thank you, and thank you to Mr. Simon and his team. I think it's obvious the Western Cape for Home Affairs is, as they say, in Sieven de Laan, that loop klop Dusselboom. Although that doesn't mean you're not going to run into some problems on occasions. I've got two questions, and maybe excuse if I just seem ignorant. What is an FOC at a mobile unit? I think I know what it means. Then the people who are deported, how are they deported? I mean, if they're Somalis, are they sent to Mogadishu, and who pays, and how do they get there? And if they're Nigerians, how do we deport them? If you could just explain. I know it's a general question, which I could have asked any of our provincial managers. Then I've got a practical question about our refugee centre. Now, Mr. Simon, the point is that the refugees get, unless they come by ship, get from the Limpopo River or Komatipoort to Cape Town. So they have means to find their own transport here. Now, we have the most refugees in the world in South Africa. And I believe it's a very serious problem for us. And I don't expect you to comment on the politics or the policy. I know you have to administer a law and the regulations, and I'm sure you, all of you and your colleagues in the other provinces, do your best. But we've just had a court case by a very prominent public figure who's also a judge called Dennis Davis, where he has asked you to, or the department, to keep the refugee center open. Now, my question to you is, as I understand it from what you've said, you are still, in fact, providing a service to refugees in the Western Cape. It hasn't been suddenly terminated, but in due course, they will have to use the other three centers in South Africa. Perhaps you could give us some background, purely from an administrative technical aspect. I then have a question on all the temporary residence permits that are pouring in from Pretoria. Who are these people who are getting the temporary residence permits? They're presumably, obviously, non-South Africans, but do you know which what nationalities they are? More or less, I mean, not to every last point of one. And then the last question I've got, and again, this is a practical question. A baby gets registered at birth. I don't think it can be fingerprinted, so it's not got a biometric record. How do you register? Do you keep the ID number only of the mother? And what happens when that baby gets to 16 or when it's at the high school at 17 years later? Is it already on the system? I just can't understand how the economics of it, economics, the mechanics of it operates. If you could please help me there. Thank you.
Thanks for the presentation and the good work that you're doing. Just a few questions going through your presentation. The first is, I'll start off with the Maitland Centre. The judgment says that essentially the services must continue, and you've indicated that from a certain date you will be terminating that. Have you checked legally that this meets the judgment and so forth? And if you could just unpack a bit of that. And then the situation with leases. I'm trying to understand how it is that offices can be closed. For a landlord to lock us out, the Department of Home Affairs out, it would mean that it would have to be a last resort that the landlord would do that. What is the problem? And I know it's the Department of Public Works, but what seems to be the gap between Home Affairs and Public Works simply don't seem to talk to each other, and these problems are created. And what is being done to fix it? And also, would it not be possible that the Department of Home Affairs somehow have some more control? Because we seem to be at the mercy of Public Works. Then, part of the problem when I visited the Maitland Refugee Centre, and one of the reasons why these kind of centres are so unpopular in built-up areas is because it creates all sorts of other social problems. And many of it, I believe, is caused by the department itself. I happened to, the day I visited the Maitland Centre, it happened to be a rainy day, quite a heavy rainy day. And these people that were queuing simply had no place to queue. They were all huddled under a ducky that was inappropriate, didn't have seating area, no ablution facilities. There were women with little babies, freezing. Surely this is part of the problem. You know, the department simply doesn't make it conducive for high volumes of people. And I must tell you, I spoke to a lot of these people, and they just, most of them just want a fair share and want to be treated correctly and just want to, you know, most of them are not criminals. They're not here to rob the country, and a lot of them could actually contribute. So surely that's part of the problem, and if we change the whole layout and how we operate these centers, even at borders, it'll be less popular and more conducive and more acceptable to the community. So perhaps you could talk a little bit about that. Then, the production staff with the high absenteeism and so forth, has any kind of study been done into the reasons why this is? My immediate guess would be that it's got to do with stress and high level of pressurized work that's constantly happening. And if no study has been done, surely this would be an idea to do that. I know this is a very generic question because it's not just the Western Cape. I'm imagining that the other provinces would have similar problems. But surely it has been looked at, and we need to then look after these staff people. And surely the fact that it's highly pressurized, high volumes of people, highly irritated, this would cause these people to be absent. And surely it's not a matter of just looking at numbers and hoping people are going to get better. Surely there must be some kind of plan. Then, with regards to qualifications, I'm gobsmacked that we have people of high qualification doing, quite frankly, menial work. How does this happen? How does the department appoint some attorneys incorrectly? There's something wrong in the process. So has this been looked at, and how is it being remedied, if at all? I'm going through as fast as I can. Then mobile units. How often is it being used? Because I'm talking about actual days, and are there real measurables as far as how many days are being used? How many outcomes? Is it being used to the maximum? That's really what I'm asking. And are we sure that this is really bearing fruit? I have no doubt that the need is there, but are we from the department side making sure that it's being used to its maximum and most efficient and effectiveness? Then I'm a little confused about the youth forums. Perhaps you can unpack it. Are these staff members that are young and so qualify as youth? And what would be the function of these forums? You know, it's nice to have career exhibitions. I'm just trying to understand how that fits in with the work the department needs to do. So perhaps you could just explain how these forums benefit the work and the outcomes that need to be achieved in this department. What I've come across in my dealings with queries that we receive in my office it's very clear to me there's a large percentage of staff, people who operate on the ground and in other levels, that simply don't know legislation. And that concerns me. And it came up when you were talking about your statistical information about your statistics with regards to asylum seekers and that kind of thing. Has this been looked at and considered? I talk to officials on the phone, and the ignorance on some legislation, and I'm not an expert, I've only been in this committee, I think I'm the newest member here, it's blatantly clear these officials haven't even read the legislation, let alone even know that it exists. Is there some kind of program to train? I'm not blaming them. I'm saying it's the responsibility of leadership in these departments to make sure these people are trained and educated and know that so it's in their head and it's on their fingertips and they know how to deal with situations. And so that could be, if we could talk about that, because I think that's very critical, because it causes all sorts of frustrations and enormous delays. Chair, that's it from my side. Thank you.
Another one, Marcella.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm sure I'll take the most lean of the pieces after all the meaty part and fat part has been addressed by my colleagues, which is a very good thing. The last one is the late registration of birth, which is in fact the first issue that I'm saying I always have an interest in what is going on around this one, because we know the vulnerability and the kind of opportunity people take in this one. I want to check with you, Mr. Simons, obviously after a very good presentation, what is it that led to this rejection of 84 in the 3 months under review? It's 84 rejections out of 2,812 applications. So I need to understand what was the nature of these cases. The other area is that you've got 11 mobile offices, and out of those, 6 are not functional. Perhaps you can give us more detail about what leads to that, and the drivers that you have employed, what do they do? Meanwhile, you have those 6 trucks standing there. In fact, those 5 trucks standing there. What is it that leads to so much delay in fixing them to ensure that they are able to be used where they are needed most? The other question, Chairperson, is that you have these officials that you are told that they take most time off, meaning that there is a bit of a challenge there, which the provincial manager has highlighted. But I do not get the mitigating strategy in terms of ensuring that they do not stay away. It's well and good to point out that they do stay away, but then what is it that we do to manage that and prevent it from happening again? Supposing the issue of vetting as a response to corruption, fraud, and other misbehaving practices, I would like to understand the 20, which is the only forms that were returned out of 50. And you are giving reasons that some of these 33 cases are confidential, given to state security agency, and we've got 20 that need secret clearance and all of that, and another 4 top secret. What does that mean in a real world? What does this mean if you were to explain to us the nature of these cases? Does it mean the provincial staff, we might lose most of these, or they cannot be trusted, or they are thieves, or they are criminals? What does it mean? We need to know that. The last one, Chair. Yesterday, when we spoke to departments, we realized from other provinces that, in fact, most, if not all of them, it was generally all of them, could not meet the 2% national threshold of people with disabilities. That also affects the Western Cape, but I must say that 1.4 is higher than most of the cases that we've seen yesterday. So when you made the remark that this province, in fact all the members who are speaking here, are saying this manager and this department in this province is doing well, and I think I need to commend him for that. But with this 2%, sir, what is your plan to ensure that you not only meet the national target but surpass that? One day it would be wonderful to see most people getting out of the social welfare in terms of them being disabled, but to take responsibility as they wish to do by being employed gainfully in the department, especially given the need and the opportunity to do so. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mine is about the closure of Cape Town Refugee Center for new applications. Is that not creating an unmanageable burden at the remaining refugee centers in the country? And the other one is about the unknown statistics of live births at connected hospitals. How come is that? And again, do you have employed people on those hospitals, or do you rely on hospital staff for information? And if that's the case, how do you intend to improve that? And the last one will be, Chairperson, is it known why there is such a large variation between hospital services when in terms of the percentage of live births that are registered, that is the 22% to over 100%? Thank you.
Thank you, Mechansibone. Mr. Simon, you may respond. But before you respond, my question is with regard to your slide 47. There's this departmental agencies and accounts. What is that? If you could please explain to us what is departmental agencies and account. And last year we visited one province
and a hospital where we had an official who was assigned to this hospital to register new beds. But the office was far from the labor ward. Now I want to know the situation in Western Cape where you have online registration as to how far is this in the office from the labor ward, and or how is this being done in the Western Cape. You may respond to questions.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, members, for all the questions. And I will also ask my colleagues via my team, because we are team, to I'll start with some responses and then ask the team to add. Honourable Member Maduna, how do we employ disability? We went to the Department of Labour as well to give us, because they've got database of disabled persons, so they provided that to us. So we sort of headhunted too. We went and phoned people and said, don't you want to come for an interview? And also some of the posts we reserve for disabled. We say, if you don't get a disabled person, and also the question in front is, as for future, if we don't, we reserve of the 121 posts we have this year, we reserve posts for disabled persons. So if we don't find a disabled person, we will just re-advertise until we get that person. But we won't fill the post until we get disabled persons in here, Chairperson. I think if we come back next year, the commitment from me and the team, because we do recruitment together, is that we'll have 2% for sure, Chairperson. That's more than what I can say. Yeah, Ayanda just indicated currently we've got 16 CVs of disabled people. That's part of the recruitment pot. So I'm sure we'll get to that 2%. Okay. Why are so many managers acting? The DMO that we have for Eden, we are still busy with that. It's a funded post. That's a manager. That funded post, we're in the process of finalizing the recruitment for that person of the, because when it comes to a senior manager, director, chairperson and members, you need to do competency assessments, you need to do proper security clearances, reference checks. There's more checks, and the process takes longer than appointing a junior person. So that process is on its way. And Mr. Mkhize and the team is in hand with all of us. So on those ones. The other acting was at the refugee center. We're not going to fill the post because we don't have a refugee center. We just have a temporary manager to oversee the customs house so that we finalize the cases we have there. So that one we won't fill. The other post we have advertised now, for example, it's people that resigned. The Deputy Director of Finance resigned, so that one has been advertised. On Monday, I'm going to the Eastern Cape because we're doing collective interviews for the Deputy Director of Human Resources as well. So we're in the process of filling these posts. The delay with the mobile unit repairs, the mobile unit repairs is still centralized within the unit called channel management. There are service providers. The problem with the mobile units we have is the satellite problems we have. So while the trucks, and this also comes back to the other question, while the trucks can drive, it's drivable, but it cannot connect because the satellites don't work. It's either there's a connectivity problem or there's been damage to the truck. Or there's been theft of some equipment. I just don't have a breakdown of the every truck now. We can get that to Jefferson, to the committee, to say, this one truck, this is the problem with it. I'm not sure if it's in the presentation. Maybe I can ask Elmin to talk to that as well. Just on FOC's Honourable Member McIntosh is a front office clerk, and I apologise, we normally use acronyms in Home Affairs. Sometimes we get used to this FOC, but it's a front office clerk. It's the person who takes in the applications. It's the production unit on a mobile unit. You have the driver. The driver is the mobile office manager. He's the supervisor, he's the driver, he's the manager, he's the cashier. He does he manages the trucks. And the FOC's front office clerks provide the support and the production for that mobile unit. Our people are deported from the Western Cape. We bus them to Lindela. We don't do direct deportations. We bus them to Lindela, and from Lindela, they deported. Maybe Jefferson, head office, would be better to explain how they then deported from Lindela. It's either by train or by chartered flight, but I wouldn't know exactly how we do that. So sorry, Honourable Member, I can't respond to that one. On the refugees, and I think there were three questions about the center, so can I just take a bit more time on the Maitland Center and just give a history where we come from and where we are now with the judgment as well, and talk about that. The center moved three times, and all three times we were moved because of a nuisance factor, perceived nuisance factor and security issues that comes with the refugee center. So we moved from Customs House. We started at Customs House, Jefferson, as you'd know, many years ago, in 1999, I think. We went to Nyanga. The court closed us down there. We went to Maitland, and we actually had a court order to say that we should close the Maitland Center because the zoning wasn't right. But we couldn't find alternative accommodation. And I say couldn't is we worked closely with Public Works, and we went to 10 buildings. We looked at the buildings. We actually found a building, but as we were negotiating with that building, we had objections. This was also in Maitland area. We received objections from neighboring businesses, so we then had to abandon that. We then actually went and we said, let's go through the service provider route. Let's advertise in the media. So we put out a tender for facilities, and we had 10 landlords also offering their buildings to us through a tender process, and we did a because we learned our lessons from previous court evictions, is that if you don't get a building that, in terms of security, in terms of zoning, in terms of health and safety, in terms of ownership, if you don't have all of those things right, we will just be ordered by the court again to close at taxpayers' cost. So we said, find a building that meets all the criteria, and also consult with the neighbors, the communities there, because they take us to court. And once we've consulted and we're happy that we've covered all the areas, then we go. So we couldn't find alternative accommodation for Maitland because none of the buildings met the criteria. So Public Works, we went through processes also to remember the phrases of question, why Maitland looked like that. It's because we were on a month-to-month rental. We had a court order to move out of Maitland. We couldn't find a suitable building in the Western Cape. Whichever area we went to, we found objections. It was either a security concern or the police would not recommend the center being there. So it was almost like we were by ourselves trying to find a center. And we couldn't effect any repairs to Maitland because the landlord who had a month-to-month rental agreement just refused based on the fact that there's no find long-term lease for him to get his money back. So we're really stuck in that predicament. So when we get when we got the termination of the lease from the landlord, we then had to move. We had no choice. Now, in terms of the other questions you asked, we, in terms of the statistics, over the last five years, only less than about 500 persons applied for asylum through the Cape Town Harbour and Airport over 5 years. That's less than 10 persons a month over 5 years, Chairperson, that actually came in Cape Town and applied for asylum. So 99% comes from land borders. And 70% of our cases, files we have here, more than 70% are either Zimbabweans or Somalis. And they come from, as you say, across the Limpopo. So they travel all the way down. So when we indicated that that the center, the customs house center, we will only finalize the cases because it's more convenient for asylum seekers if they enter through Baybridge to apply at Musina, because at one stage we had more Zimbabweans applying in Cape Town than at Musina. So it's more convenient to apply at Musina or at Marabastad than traveling all the way back at cost. And also there's abuse, Jefferson, as you travel down north, you know, abuse by, I don't know, all sorts of, as you find a way to Cape Town. So we felt that the Cape Town Center is not correctly positioned in terms of that. So our statistics is clear. I'm just looking at the other questions you asked as well. So the services we render is just we want to finalize those who applied in Cape Town, as I said before, so that they don't need to go and take the file to Durban, or we send the files to the other centers. As the member indicated, we create a burden for the other centers. So we finalize those cases here. And any newcomer, because a newcomer is not yet in the country, any newcomer who then comes into the country can apply to the nearest refugee center on the borderline. That's what the rationale for what we said. It's better than to close in Cape Town and allow them to go there. And then also, Chairperson, just on the burden on the other centers, the question that was raised, there's also funded posts created for the other centers, and we're in a recruitment drive also to appoint more posts there. The DG, for example, is driving the process of ensuring that the other centers really manage better. Every month I go up and I sit with the DG and all the center managers, and we report on our processes, on our productions, on dealing with the demand for our services that's coming there. Also, Chairperson, the DG will come, I understand Mr. Mkhize indicates, I don't know, next week or whenever, to speak about the moving of centers to the borderline. Because there is discussions, I understand, with Lebombo to open another borderline that side. And again, with Member De Freitas, that center will look at our current processes and develop a center to deal with the current processes. Because at the moment, we get the building and then we have to fit into the building. Now we have opportunity to know what our processes are, how we want to deal with newcomers, extensions, the scribe applicants, and then design the building and have the building to fit into the processes. That's the ideal. We could never have that in Maitland. Yeah. I'm not sure if I covered all of those, but also in the court case, maybe I should say, Jefferson, that there is a statement out last night. I got it on the internet from Ronnie Mamwepa from our communications department, and the statement reads that the department are still waiting for the written judgment. We have not received the written judgment. And once we receive the written judgment, we will then, the department will decide on the way forward. But until then, the center will operate as per the current status quo, which means that there's no refugee center in Cape Town. We only have a temporary facility, and newcomers must apply in the other centers in Musina and Durban and in Marabastad. In terms of nationalities for TRPs, we most of our applications are Zimbabweans, Congo, Netherlands, Germans, and Namibians. But I think, Jefferson, it's better if I get more exact nationalities as well as the categories that they imply in. So that's the second one I will then submit to the portfolio committee after the sitting during the week, Jefferson. Is then, just make a note on the TRPs and a breakdown of those permits. The babies being registered, the process is that at birth, when you come for a breached birth certificate, that's the first birth certificate you get. An ID number is allocated to you. That ID number is then used for medical aid and whatever for you. That your ID number belongs to you. At the age of 16, you then apply for your ID. Then we take your biometrics and we add it to the ID number. We don't take ID, as you know, ID number, fingerprints of babies. So that's what's happening. I know in terms of, I think the minister has spoken about this and the DGs, we need to tighten that up because that could be abused, because that ID number lies dormant many times until you turn 16. And the minister has asked us to look at linking the ID number to the mother's ID number, so that if anyone wants to use that ID number, you can't use it without the fingerprints of either the mother or the father, but firstly the mother's instance. And if the mother might have passed away, the mother's ID document, so that we can use that. So to just to tighten up that possible abuse of that ID number from 0 to 16 years old. Member the phrases, we have checked with our legal section, and that's why we came out with a media statement in that regard. Why would landlords lock us out? They lock us out because in the case of Mitchell's Plain, he wasn't paid for 3 months. So he wanted money, and he wasn't paid for 3 months because there was no lease agreement signed. So the DG then decided that service delivery is important. We then paid the landlord from Home Affairs budgets, and then we claimed the money back from Public Works. So the DG that very same, the next day it was opened again. But when it was locked out, we had a mobile unit there to deliver a service. So this is what happens with lockouts. It's the landlords just get frustrated because they don't have an income. And it's not only Western Cape, it happens in other areas as well. So can Home Affairs have more control? I think the DG is very outspoken about this, that we wish we could have more control on a lease. The DG would say that the lease from Mitchell's Plain should be with the head of the office of Mitchell's Plain in the province, not even head office. So that if the office is locked, you don't need to, I can't blame anyone but myself. So that's what we would want to do, but of course, as you know, that the mandate for property and leases is with the Department of Public Works. But I know DG has met with the DG of Public Works on our portfolio of properties. I've spoken about Maitland already, and that the reason for absenteeism, my colleagues can also add, but you're right, Member de Freitas, it's a whole series of issues, and I'm sure we haven't done a complete study, but the reason for putting it here is that you can only deal with the problem once you've identified what the problem is and where the problem lies. So the problem, we know where it is now. And it's to do with stress, it's to do with probably ill discipline, it's to do with how they are being managed and supervised, and it's to do with creating a climate where they feel like coming to work. You know, so it's a series of things that we need to look at, and part of that that I presented on office improvement for the three big offices is trying really to look at that. And also, Ayanda will say that we have decided as our Exco province that to fund the employer wellness position. So that is a dedicated position, an employer wellness person, so that if you feel maybe personally there's some challenges that you need to talk to somebody, that will have an employer's wellness we don't have at the moment. So that we've also identified as a key post to fill this financially. The qualifications, I think that is an opportunity. We focus and give advantage to those with qualifications and appoint those with qualifications. That is opportunity for Home Affairs. We started the last year too. So, Member de Freitas, they are doing, some of them are doing menial jobs. That's why we're trying to address it. But as I said before, you can only address it until you understand who's got the qualification and what they're doing now. And then bring them in more areas where they can use their skills that they require through the qualifications. So it's an opportunity for us to really embark on. But Ayanda can also.
Morning, Chairperson and the members. Just to come in there as well, in terms of the qualification, these people who are qualified, being the juniors or operating at the lowest level, what we have done is the study, the
the survey. Well, what we found it was that these people, they qualified or progressed while in the employment. So hence, we have taken a view to say that the 94 that we have currently that are in the bursary scheme, we are going to closely monitor them as well, so that by the time they qualify, at least we could also tap on their skills. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Ayanda. And, you know, Chairperson and members, we never had a director of finance before. You know, the PM was responsible for all of this, but now I have Ayanda Mafuleka, and she doesn't like me to say it. She's a chartered accountant. She comes. She's highly qualified. So she focuses on HR issues and finance issues and supply chain management so that I can focus more on your service delivery outreach programs. So that's the added value we have, I think, the department of having directors, finance and supply. So these type of issues she's identified and made it a project of hers to bring these youngsters with qualifications in and make them, put them in areas where they can really use that qualification, and the department gets the benefits from that. And then in the youth forum, who qualifies? It's a DHA youth forum. This it's under 35, so I don't qualify. I'm told Ayanda still qualifies. What they do is they the link between management and the youth. So we use them as a vehicle to reach out to the youth, to encourage the youth to study, to work harder, to aspire to become leaders. They also look at programs for the youth in, like, going to schools, like the peer career counseling. They want to participate there to tell the youth about opportunities in home affairs, etc. So they really take care of that part of the area that sometimes we have, not the youth, we keep on forgetting about the youth. So they make sure that the youth agenda is always featuring on the agendas of where the province want to move to. On the legislation of staff and training, we have a learning academy. Chairperson, I don't know if they've presented here. I'm sure they have. On the DHA qualification, a qualification that will feature, that will focus on home affairs legislation, policies, implementation issues. So there is a program. It's just on this regard, Chairperson, I can't speak much about the learning academy again, but we have our internal trainer here. But the trainer focuses on more on operational issues. But the operational issues are also linked with legislation. But the experts on training in home affairs is the learning academy we have in home affairs. Then, Honorable Mkasela, on the LRBs, I'm going to ask Yamin to just go through what were the areas that for the rejections of LRBs and the issues there.
Thank you, Mr. Simons. Honorable Chairperson and members, if I could also just quickly go back to the mobile units, just to indicate that the mobile unit office managers is forced to have 18 mobile venues per month. That is the target, that is the monthly target that they must comply with. And as the monitoring and evaluation team, we're actually looking at how often those mobiles go out and how far they went and the fuel consumption and all of that. If they did not comply to the 18, then we look into the reasons why, and mostly you'll see from the presentation that most of these mobile units are drivable. So although the satellites are not working, they do go out and they take in applications offline. Although that is not the ideal situation, because we want to register births and hand out the birth certificates on the spot, especially to the far-lying communities that these mobile units serve. But there is a target for them, and they do most of the time adhere to that. Then in terms of the late registration of birth, if I could just go to that slide. The number of applications rejected is usually those cases that's a no-show. Once we have received confirmation from the fingerprints, we call the applicants to come in for an interview, and then they don't come in, or they don't come to the office again to complete the application. Part of that could also be that the application was already because we now have a function where we can look at if an application wasn't lodged somewhere else in the country. Previously, we didn't have insight towards that, but we're trying to close the gap where people apply, put in multiple applications and then jeopardize the system. If you just look at members, the number of applications referred to IMS, those are the applications where there's suspected illegal foreigners trying to enter the system. And those are then investigated by immigration officers. They write a report and send it back to the Lake Registration Affairs Committee for a further adjudication. Thank you. Sorry, that is slide number 68.
Thank you, Chairperson. If I can continue. So we have responded to the trucks and why they and what's the process to fix them. Like I said, there is service providers, but again, I think what we have decentralized now is the funding. It used to be centralized, so the DJ has instructed that even the repairs must be decentralized. So if it's a mechanical problem, we can take it to a garage, but when it's a satellite, that service provider we don't have access to yet as a province. And then I think I responded to how do you ensure staff don't stay away. That's a difficult one. I think you need to create an environment where they want to come and work. There's issues when we, for example, did a survey in Cape Town. We asked in Barrack Street, we asked the staff to write on a piece of paper what's preventing them from doing their job. And you know, so many of them said issues like respect and communication. So respect goes both ways. So it's more soft issues here at hand, and so at least as I said, we understand the problem, and now we try to deal with it with the improvement plan. In terms of vetting, I don't have the complete descriptions there. I know there's for confidential, secret, and top secret. There's different categories, Jefferson. I'm not just sure. I know it depends on the level of work and exposure you have to security and information of the department. I know the front office clerk, for example, is confidential, and myself would be top secret because I sit in Excel and all of that. And the way they do the vetting is also different. I had to go for polygraph tests, etc., a series of tests and interviews with my family and all of that, and friends, and where the measurement for the confidential is different. But again, on this one, unless any of the other province can add or anyone. That's more that. But I can provide this also as more information if you need if the committee needs one. Then it's the third thing I have to do.
Okay. If it's in terms of security reasons, if that's for security reasons, then I don't think it will be proper for us to get that information.
Chairperson, no, I respect that. The only point that if you even listen at the nature of my question was, are we facing a situation where we are about to lose most of our officials because they are thieves or because they are corrupt or they are criminals? So he has responded to the safety nature of that question and the fact that it's mainly done for the internal security of the department. So I thought that there are people who are high flyers who are regarded as fugitives elsewhere, but they are working for our country. I think that would have been a very dangerous scenario.
I think I responded to the disability. Honorable Member Khasiboni, in terms of the burden, I think I've responded to that as well. I think the one thing to say about the asylum seekers and the approval rates as well, you'd know that close to 90% of asylum seekers who apply are rejected. So it indicates that, and we are very sensitive to genuine asylum seekers and the plight of asylum seekers, but there's a lot of abuse in this in the application of asylum, etc., because the rate of approvals are very low. But in terms of the burden, yes, we are certainly looking at increasing the capacity and also looking at additional centers in the Lebombo area, as I indicated. In terms of the stats at hospitals, we get the statistics from the hospitals. Now, many of the matrons or CEO of the hospitals don't have a problem with the statistics to give it to Home Affairs. But there are five who are not willing to give it. They even though we're also government department, but I've met with the hospital staff. So we're in negotiations to get that stats. Because for us it's important to know how many babies. For me, if you're successful, is if 100 babies were born, you registered 100, you're successful. Now, we can't measure whether it's fruitfully employed people at the hospital if you don't know how many babies were born, so that we can measure how many. So Jefferson is just sometimes a personality issue with some of the heads of these hospitals. I know in George, for example, they want it in writing and then they want a meeting with me. So I'm going to George to meet with the head of the hospital.
The steps you're talking about, is it at the hospital where we have online registration? You didn't have maybe a meeting with the health officials first before you they allocated space that this is what you're going to need from them, and you know that kind of arrangement with the hospital.
Thank you, Chairperson. We did. I
don't understand how can they refuse the Home Affairs Department with stats,
yes.
Especially best stats.
Yeah, Chairperson. I have the same feeling as yourself, because we need to get it from the hospital. We want to know day in and day out, because the hospital would know best how many came into the maternity ward and how many babies were born. The health department gets the stats at the end of the month. They don't get it as regularly as the hospital. So we have worked through, we always work through the department first and then go to the hospitals. Like education, we work with education first and then go to the principal. But it's now our intervention from a senior level now that needs to take place.
I don't think you need to follow that up, because you need to know how many babies were born. Even if a baby passes on, it's still the Home Affairs that must get involved there. Sure. Okay.
Thank you, Chairperson. Then your questions, before I hand over to Ayanda to take slide 47, the labor wards and how far we with labor wards. In some offices, we are in the labor wards. I know, for example, in Sierras, we're outside, in an outside building. So our official must go every morning to the labor ward and every hour. So that is still a problem. Some places we well situated, but there are hospitals where we are not. We're given space that they have spare for us instead of what's how close we can be to the maternity ward. It's what space is available in the hospital. So the CEO of that hospital gives us almost like whatever's available. And we have a policy that we don't take space if it's not secure, because we're a security department. We need to make sure that the information are safeguarded. Some of them give us an open area and say, put up your computers there with other people. We just refuse. So that is still for us a point where we are not, we're struggling in the Western Cape as well.
Okay, Jefferson, just to answer on slide 447, can I just quickly take you through the line item on transfers and subsidies, each line item? For provincial and local governments, the 90,000 that we've budgeted for, that talks to the licensing of our vehicles. Okay, departmental agencies and accounts, that account talks to the payments that you make to departmental agencies. So for example, like your radio licenses. So households, that's a tricky one, because this one relates to employees. That's what normally goes through that line item is the amount for your long-term services. Okay, like your long-term service awards, we call it. And also,
what was also the 53,000 that we had previously not budgeted for, okay? What has gone through there is the transfers as well, the cost, the transfer cost of our officials. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I've covered all the questions. We've covered all the questions.
Thank you, Mr. Yusuf and your team. Thanks for your response to the question we've asked. I'm sure members are happy with your responses. And we accept that one of the security, the vetting one, which is a spook thing. We cannot dwell much into that thing. I think we must come to the, I mean, we have come to the end of the Western Cape presentation. Honourable members, will break for tea for 10 minutes. And then take the next presentation, which will be Northern Cape. Thank you very much, Mr. Yunis and your team. You may leave because I'm told that you have to leave for the next appointment for tomorrow.
Thank you, Chairperson. We are fine. We want to be in solidarity with our comrades.
Okay. No, you're welcome.
If you might.
Okay. No, that's fine. Let's attend for tea because we don't have lunch arranged. We are financially crippled and the only thing we can offer is tea.
they've got cows. Western Cape will bring sheep. We have the price.